Hello, Park Street.
Thanks for listening. Today is day 23 of our journey through Lent. And today I'm happy to be joined with some very special people in my life, my family. I'm here with my dad, John, and my sister, Amanda Elkins, and my youngest sister, Shannon Harmon. And they've agreed to kind of do this passage. Today we're about halfway through Lent, and this passage today is kind of a turning point, I guess, in the Gospel of John, where over the last few days we've been reading passages where Jesus has been kind of getting into disputes and arguments, and he's been developing enemies. But, you know, today's passage is one where that only it starts to intensify, and where Jesus really starts to, the road starts to get a lot more, we get a lot closer to the cross after this story. And as many of you guys know, my mom passed away last June, and so when this project started coming to fruition, I really wanted to have, you know, my family to talk about this particular passage, which is the raising of Lazarus. As you know, when we've read through it, we've just seen a lot of echoes of our own recent experience. So thank you guys all for being here and doing this. We're going to start reading the passage. This is John 11. The total passage is verse 1 through 43. So, Shannon, you starting?
Mm-hmm. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago, the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you are going back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him."
On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him, "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?"
Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go."
Right. Thanks for reading, everybody. I guess to start, is there anything in any of you notice in the passage that speaks to your own personal experience or just that you find noteworthy that you're noticing when you read through the whole story?
For me, in one of the first times that I read this, it's easy to identify with Mary and Martha when they come to Jesus and say, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And that echoes with me a little bit with Mom passing. We prayed fervently for her, and the whole church did. And I know that Jesus was with us throughout the whole process, and that we prayed for his will to be done. I guess we just assumed that his will was going to line up with our will, and so the pain in their voice and the, you know, kind of like the question maybe behind their "why did you wait so long" kind of resonates with me, because I thought Mom was going to beat this and that the prayers were going to be answered. So I can relate to them and say, "Jesus, if you would have been here, my mom wouldn't have died." Even though I know he was here and with us throughout the whole thing, that stuck out to me.
Yeah, I think it's natural to for us to kind of want to, you know, figure out ways that it could have all happened differently. You know, I think Martha, you know, when somebody close to you passes away like that, it's like you go through a process of saying, you know, well, what could we have done to change the outcome, right? And I guess we all kind of know that there's only so much human beings can do in terms of, you know, medicine and science and all that stuff, but it's like we believe God has the authority, you know, over life and death, and it's like even if we couldn't have fixed it or made it go different, you know, Jesus could have. And it's hard to, you know, I hear what you're saying about the quote they say to Jesus is the same quote, you know, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Martha adds, you know, "But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." Mary just says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Like, Martha seems to be much more like thinking it out logically, you know, and knowing that, you know, everybody dies at some point, and she's kind of like, "Jesus, you know, this is kind of on you a little bit because you weren't here," but then she kind of backs it up a little bit, you know, she kind of hedges what she's saying by saying, "Well, you know, I know that you're still God and you can still do anything you want," and Mary just kind of lets it sit there, like, she doesn't say anything else, you know. She's like, "Lord, like, if you were here, this wouldn't have happened, period." And I don't know, I've kind of felt both ways. Have you? I guess that's kind of interesting how different people respond to situations like that, where, you know, some people are like, you know, God's in control, and he can do, you know, anything. And other people are just like, "Look, I'm not going to go that far. I'm just going to say what I think and be done with it." And I like Mary's response in terms of just like, this is what I feel like, and I'm not gonna try to be like, "But, you know, it's you know, you're in control." And you know, it's like, you know, I'm upset. I'm mad, I'm angry, you know, you could have stopped this and didn't, you know. there's a lot of stuff of how Jesus responds, you know, in this story, which I found somewhat interesting. Verse 5 says, although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. So, you know, John's kind of clearly pointing out that, like, it wasn't because Jesus was indifferent or that Jesus didn't care or whatever. You know, he's clearly saying Jesus loved these people deeply, but he didn't do, you know, he postponed, you know, what he was going to do for a little while for some reason. The other thing is, like, when Jesus arrives there, he has this kind of interaction with Martha, but then he also has an interaction with Mary where it says, when Jesus saw her weeping in verse 33 and he saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him and he was deeply troubled. And you just kind of see Jesus' own emotional responses towards the situation, you know, like, he was upset, he was weeping, he was deeply angry and troubled. And he wept, you know? And it was like, so how do we believe both, right, that Jesus cares what happens to us and our loved ones, but yet also that he has the power to stop it and yet doesn't stop it? And that's what the people are saying. You know, the kind of the skeptics in verse 37 are saying, this man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying? It's like, well, if you love somebody, you know, why wouldn't you have kept this bad thing from happening? And people are having a hard time, you know, wrapping their mind around both of those things.
It seems like Jesus answers that in this passage too. He says in verse 15, "I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe." And just before he raises Lazarus, well, and then he emphasizes that again to Martha, that I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though they die. And then he says again, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying I really understand what he's, you know, or can process that, but he seems to answer the why, you know, in his own words there.
Yeah, and it seems like he's seeing a little further down the road to, you know, he has a different perspective than the people who are mourning have, you know. He sees beyond just what's happening currently, but he knows what he's going to do, you know. He knows how it's going to continue. Mandy, you told me, I don't know when this was, but you were saying verse 4. When Jesus heard about that Lazarus was sick, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. And, you know, he doesn't say Lazarus will not die, mm-hmm. but he says the sickness will not end in death. And I just find that to be such a fascinating way of putting that. You know, like you were telling me, like, you know, essentially in the way Lazarus' sickness will not end in death, yet he died. You know, that mom's sickness will not ultimately end in death either. You know, there's more coming to the story. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to think about that and process that for whatever it's worth, you know, or whatever it means.
I also think, and I read this, I think, in a commentary, in that verse 14, when Jesus tells them, you know, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so you may believe. Because if Jesus was there, this commentator, I think, was saying that he may have healed him, because he was his friend, and he would have been moved to compassion, and he may have reached out and healed him because of his love for him. And so, I mean, Jesus knew what he was going to do, and so not that it was easier for him to stay, but he almost had to stay away just so that he would not save Lazarus early and that he could do the miracle so that more may believe. So I think that that's another...
So that raises the question, did he remove himself from us when, you know, from your mom, from Pam, in some sense?
Yeah, like just the same way he stayed for for two more days, right, or whatever, and before he came.
Is it sort of like maybe there's a greater glory that will come through her death than if she would be healed now?
Well, I think that that's a good point, because throughout the whole book, Jesus has done miracles, and he's been, you know, there are all of these signs throughout the book, right? The first one being Jesus turns water into wine. And then he heals a crippled man, a blind man, an official's son, and he's, throughout the book, he's doing these healings. But this is like, to me, this is like the final upping the ante of what does Jesus actually have authority and control over, right? Healing somebody who's sick is one thing, but raising somebody that has been dead for 4 days is a completely different level of, like, freaky. And, you know, it's like, he's saying, like, that, you know, for your sakes, I'm glad that, you know, that I wasn't there. Because like you said, like, the disciples have seen him heal people and do miracles and signs. But there's still this question of, right, that death is what is hovering over all of our lives, right? That we all know we're going to die. And even though Jesus can heal us and he can make our lives a little bit better while we're here, you know, can you know, maybe help us get through life better or solve our problems or heal us physically, like, what's he going to do about death, you know? Mm-hmm. And death is the final and ultimate, you know, frustration of human life. And Jesus is, like, saying, like, no, this, my power goes beyond, you know, healing people, and it extends completely beyond death and life, the authority of, that I have authority over death and life, you know? And it does seem like this is, like, the biggest display, right, of his power. And it's also, like, because it's such a huge display, it's like the final thing he does. Like, Jesus' own death is, like, seems to be, there's, like, little hints about his own death throughout the whole passage, right? Like, so chapters, like, 7 through 10 are, you know, he's getting in fights with the Pharisees, they're trying to stone him, you know, he's in trouble, he leaves. And, you know, in verse 8, when he says, let's go back to Judea, the disciples are saying, Rabbi, they're trying to kill you there, why are you going back there, you know? And then in verses, Thomas, right? Thomas got, like, kind of a bad nickname, Doubting Thomas, but, like, he's also the guy that's like, you know, hey, we're going to go back to Judea, we're all going to die together, you know? And the fact that, like, Jesus put himself, like, when he went back to raise Lazarus, he knew that his own death, he was walking into his own death. And to me, that's, you know, kind of an interesting, just, like, yeah, Jesus didn't do some stuff that we wanted him to do, and he didn't heal Mom, but alongside all that, you know, he's going back into, you know, in order for Mom to be resurrected someday, like, we all have the hope of, and for her and for ourselves, like, Jesus' death is what allows him to raise us, and he's willing to trade, right, Lazarus's life for his life. And even though he doesn't do things in the right order or the right way that we think, right, like, this whole story is, like, his death just seems to be hovering over the entire story. You know, like, it talks about the cave that they put Lazarus in, right? And Jesus says in verse 39 to roll the stone aside, right? Like, John's, like, prepping you for, like, yeah, Lazarus is, the stone was sealed, right? And then it got rolled aside, just like Jesus' stone was sealed, it was going to be rolled aside. And I just don't know, I mean, to me, it's the whole situation that we've been through over the last, whatever, 6 or 8, 9 months has sucked, but there is this other part of knowing that Jesus still has some type of, there's still, the story is not finished yet, you know? And I guess you just kind of have to, like, hold that in your hands, and I don't know what to do with it, but it's there, and I think there's, you know, something yet to happen, you know, that we don't know about, that's there. So.
Yeah, and when you say to, like, kind of hold on to that, I can, another verse that I believe that the Holy Spirit gave to me to comfort me is when I was sitting with Mom right after she passed. And I don't even know what I was thinking about, if I was thinking about anything. And back in chapter 6, Jesus does some challenging teaching and a bunch of disciples leave him. And he turns to Simon Peter and he says, you do not want to leave too, do you? Oh, he asks the 12. And this verse just came to me right after Mom passed. It's Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. And so when I get into my crabby moods about I don't care about life, we're all going to die, it's stupid, you know, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? I just kind of go back to that verse because, I mean, if we don't have Jesus, we don't have anything. We don't have a hope of seeing Mom. We don't have a hope of anything after this life. And so I think the Holy Spirit knew that I was going to go into some cynicism and some crabbiness, and so I think he gave that to me as a, you know, don't let go of me.
I find it interesting too, just I feel like two qualities of Jesus that stick out to me in this chapter is that Jesus is a God of comfort, and yet he is all powerful too, yet at the same time and in control. I always found it interesting that he wept with them when he saw the sisters mourning, even though he knew that he would raise Lazarus, you know, moments later, that he took the time to grieve with them and to cry with them, and to acknowledge that death is a terrible thing and that he didn't want it, you know, in the creation of the world. That was not God's plan. He, you know, came that we would have life. So I always found that interesting, that he is just a God of comfort. And yet at the same time, you know, he's also completely in control. What makes Christianity to me, kind of what you were saying, Mandy, that, you know, who else do we have but Jesus? I mean, no one else claims to be the resurrection and the life, you know. So knowing that Jesus is in control, and that he has the power to raise someone from the grave and even himself, you know, in the upcoming chapters, is comforting too, just knowing that he loves us and yet he is in control even when we don't quite understand. I think it's important that, at least for me, I know that those are both qualities of his, that he loves us and yet he is all powerful. He's not just a teddy bear God, but he has the power to allow things to happen, but it's ultimately, you know, for our good, and that he doesn't ask us to go somewhere where he hasn't gone first himself. So I found that comforting.
Yeah. Well, like you said, Shannon, it's like the theological parts of this and the real emotional human parts go together. You know, like Jesus says in verses 25 and 26, you know, I am the resurrection and the life. You know, anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. And everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. And then he asks, you know, do you believe this, Martha? You know, like, do you think that's actually possible? And like you're saying, it's like it does sound a bit difficult to believe in some cases. It doesn't seem possible. And at some point, I guess you have to believe that it is possible that we live in the God created a world where death can be reversed, you know. And I feel like, you know, we obviously believe that, and you need to believe that. But I also find it really comforting when just to see Jesus' reaction of weeping and wailing, you know. And the fact that he was deeply troubled, and that, to me, the biggest thing, I guess, that I've experienced of just, like, crying is a powerful thing to do, you know, and to express your emotions in that way is something that's not always, you know, easy to do, or that it's natural, but, like, weeping is a way that you can kind of express what you're really thinking without having to deal with all the nitty-gritty theology and logic and intellectual stuff, and you can just be sad, you know. And the fact that Jesus was so, you know, moved and was part of the mourning, even though he knew, right, that it wasn't going to last, that the death isn't going to last, he was still overcome emotionally with it. And I think that just speaks to just the grieving process of just saying, like, even if you believe in verses 25 and 26, which are hard to believe and require, you know, faith, obviously, it's like, even if you believe in that, you're still not going to be able to get around the weeping and the sadness and the depression and the you know, the uncomfortable parts of mourning. You know, it's they go together, and the fact that they went together, like Jesus holds them together, you know, has been, I guess, something that's been resonating with my own, I guess, personal experience.
I think something else that, you know, when we were talking about how Lazarus stayed, or not Lazarus, Jesus stayed where he was for two more days, and Dad was saying, well, maybe he had to remove himself, or maybe, you know, did he remove himself from us? And I just find it, I just had, was thinking about the, like, the self-control God must have, because, I mean, he knows this whole plan that we have no clue, that we just play a microscopic part of, but, I mean, he allows this to happen, and you can see through this story how death grieves him. So we know that he grieved with us when Mom passed, and, I mean, even though Lazarus got to come back, you know, to Earth, and Mom didn't, and she will be resurrected one day, for, I feel like it could have been very hard for Jesus to tell us no. Like, and so I think that that's comforting, because, you know, we thought it was going to happen, and the fact that it didn't, I think we can take comfort in him saying, you know, maybe I wanted to, guys, I really, for your sake, wanted to, but there's a greater purpose that I can't say yes to you right now. You know, like, I just, because he wept with Mary and Martha, and he showed that compassion, even though he knew it was going to happen, it's like, I don't know, I just have never thought about it that, you know, like that.
It reminds me of dealing with kids, right? That we do that all the time. We want to fulfill their desires, but sometimes we say no for a bigger reason than they can understand.
Yeah, and I do think just reading through passages like this, is it's comforting to know, to me, that God is good and that God can be trusted, even when you don't have all the information and all the knowledge. And like the verse you were talking about, Mandy, about, you know, where else would we go? That's like, we can't figure God out. We can't figure Jesus out. But to me, that if we were to say, well, you know, God could have solved this problem. He didn't, you know, we're going to turn the keys in on our faith and walk away. It's like, you still have to have something else, you know, like, you still have to decide how else you're going to live your life and what you're going to believe, and what you're going to base, base the rest of your life on, and what you're going to place your hope in. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't have a better answer. You know, like you said, I have the same answer Peter had, which was, God, like, you're the hope. You're the only place that we feel, you know, that you're the only one that can do this kind of stuff. You know, no one else can. If anybody can, you can. You know, and if you can't, you know, nobody can. But this story just sits out here in the middle of Lent, as just like this reminder that Jesus is claiming and offering, and we're claiming and offering, that God is in complete and utter control of your life and circumstances, no matter what, and that he also suffered and died himself. It wasn't that he just was indifferent or left us to live our lives, you know, in this this kind of broken and sinful world. You know, that God was deeply moved and came to earth and subjected himself to death, so that somehow through that, you know, we would have life and that eternal life. And I find that to be like, I have hope in that, and not much else. just not out of a strong faith, not out of like, I believe this stuff so much all the time. It's like, it's not that at all. It's like, it's just that Jesus is the only person that I have ever met or seen that claims to be able to do insane things that only God can do, if there is a God. You know, it's like, it's just that people would have seen this kind of stuff. I mean, if you were in the crowd and seen this, I mean, it would have just been. And it does, like, as we're going to keep reading tomorrow and the day after, you know, people are just, it's just going to push everything to a boil in terms of what's going on with the religious leaders. And, you know, people are realizing, like, we got to get rid of this guy. You know, if we don't kill this guy, stuff's going to just continue to blow up. And so we just kind of sit here with the reality that this is who Jesus is, all the different pieces and parts of him that we see through the book of John. You know, it's ultimately all of this stuff that he's doing is leading to his death.
Well, the other thing you and I were talking to a little bit, Ryan, is that Jesus gets the same answer we did in the garden, you know. And I don't want to give anything away for anyone who hasn't read ahead, but...
Spoiler alert.
You know, but it's just like, Jesus didn't want to die. And he said, if there's any other way. And God told him no. And I feel like, you know, we can identify with getting the answer we didn't want. And Jesus knew it was going to happen. That's the thing. Like, he knew. Like, he knew ahead of time everything that was going down before he came. And he still was like, I don't want to do this. But I will. And so it's like, I didn't want mom to die, but I will continue to walk this path. And that's the thing that's frustrating too, that it's like, I still am like, yeah, but you could have. Like, you could have. You
know? Right, right.
But I mean, there was no other way, I guess, right, for Jesus, because like there had to be a sacrifice, and it had to be a pure one. And so it's like, yeah, like you can get like the feelings and the theological. Sometimes I get annoyed with the theological because I'm like, I just want to be angry. I just want to be mad that you didn't answer me the way I wanted.
Yeah.
I want to be upset. And I don't think Jesus gets mad maybe about that. You know, like in the Psalms, people, you know, write all kinds of crazy stuff and yell at God. And we're told to do that because he already knows. But sometimes it's like, the theological like creeps back in. It's like, yeah, but you know, Amanda. And I shut it back up. I don't want to know. I just want to be mad.
Yeah, and I'm with you. It's just that, okay, we would all rather preferred mom been healed of her illness and been healthy for another, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, right? And we would have enjoyed those years, just like we enjoyed the time we had with her. But it's also like, I feel like God is... Death is, regardless of the fact that we dislike it and hate it and avoid it, it's clearly part of what God is doing in our lives, right? Our physical death is part of God's plan at some point, you know? And it's unavoidable. It's like, I feel, as I've kind of looked back on our prayers, it's like, God, you know, help us, you know, how long can we pray for God to keep us from dying? You know, I prayed that he would save mom and that he would give her more years and that she'd be healthy and she could, you know, meet more grandkids and all that stuff. But it's like, at some point I've just been thinking like, you know, at some point we have to accept the fact, right, that we're going to die. And we have to accept the fact that God, it's part of his will in some weird, mysterious way that we all die. And not just that we die, but then he can, that will be resurrected in a different form, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, the hope is that because Jesus himself went through this process, you know, it gives me hope that we can go through it too. And even though I don't like it and I don't want to, and the only reason I'm doing it is because we don't have control, we have to. And I guess, like you said, Jesus had to. You know, he prayed the same things. Like, can you remove me from this? And for some reason, it's hard to explain how this all works, but in some ways, the death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus is this process and path that God is going through. And that when Jesus died and was resurrected, something happened, you know, that's going to change everything. And when we die, you know, we're going to be resurrected and things are going to be different. And on the other side of that, we'll be able to see, I guess, more of the story. But it's just hard to sit in the middle of all this kind of just emotion and uncertainty of just like, we don't know the answer. So we don't know why. Well, guys, I appreciate you guys spending time and reading this passage and talking about this. And thanks to anyone who's listening. We appreciate you listening. I know that this conversation was, I mean, not necessarily easy. So thank you for being a part of this this recording, guys. And I love you. And thanks a lot.
Love you too.
Love you.
Thank you.
All right. See you tomorrow, everybody.